This is a message that I'd get across to every one of you listeners. There's no shame in walking, or there's no shame in being slower than the person who's in front of you. When you go out to run, you are not, unless you are Eliud Kipchoge or being paid to do so, you're not in a race. I think we've done really well as a running community to be very inclusive and to encourage people to remember actually the competition we're in is with ourselves every day, just to actually get out there when we feel that the world's looking at us and the world's judging us, just to get out there, persevere, and actually continue to be the very best we can be.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Running Tales. I'm Craig Lewis, and this week's extraordinary story from the world of running comes from Rohan Kalacharan. Rohan, a sub-3-hour marathoner, is on the cusp of something extraordinary. With 81 marathons already behind him, a figure which is likely to have increased by the time this podcast goes out, the man, once dubbed Ro Farah by friends, is aiming to reach the 100 marathon mark before he turns 50 next year. But that achievement barely touches the surface of Rohan's story. Over a 15-year period, starting as a teenager, he struggled with his mental health, attempting suicide 3 times. Eventually, he was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and with a lot of hard work, Ro was able to move forward with his life. But in confronting his mental demons, Ro began to neglect his physical well-being, ballooning up to 19 stone. It took a visit to the 2012 Olympic Games in London to spark him into action, and eventually he found running, a sport which has since allowed him to raise many thousands of pounds for Mind, the mental health charity. I started my conversation with Rohan by asking him how he became a part of that Olympic legacy.
I think it's interesting. I wasn't living in London at the time, and you'd hear all about the 2012, the Games legacy that they wanted to have. And for me, I was just doing the tourist bit. I wanted to see the greatest show on earth. And it happened to be within 100 miles from home. And I, you know, little did I know that actually I would become a perfect example of that legacy. And for listeners, when I turned up at the stadium to watch the track and field, I felt sorry for anyone who sat next to me, because I was big enough to probably take up 2 seats at the time. I was 19 stone 8 at my heaviest, which you know, ultimately it was a combination of things over the years. I mean, going back further than that, I'd played a lot of competitive sport as a kid. Played a high standard of cricket, rugby, and hockey. Cricket, my dad was an international sportsman, so that was something natural that I took up. And then around 17, 18 was when things began to unravel a bit. Eventually, some 15 years later, and I'm sure we'll talk about the mental health aspect through the recording. And eventually, it was 15 years on, in my early 30s, that I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder after 3 attempts to take my own life. And that's a story in itself. But ultimately, during that time, my sport went out the window. And, you know, for those years after the diagnosis and going through that journey of recovery, such was the focus on my mental well-being, it got to a point where actually I totally forgot about the physical side of things. Now, actually, as we well know, the two of them are very, very closely interlinked. And, you know, it's a blessing and a good job that I got back hold of my physical well-being before my mental well-being began to tailspin again. But going back to 2012, that was when I was at my lowest ebb in terms of physical condition. I was, I couldn't run a bath, let alone anything else. And believe me, we were on the top tier of the stadium, and just walking up the stairs left me out of breath. And it was about 6 months on from London 2012 that I was fairly unwell with, as it turned out, it was nothing more than flu, but I couldn't kick it for about 2 months, I'd say. And I went to my GP, and she was kind of like, you know, Ro, without being unkind, look at yourself in the mirror and actually understand why you can't kick these illnesses, because you're so actually out of condition, out of shape. You know, it's no wonder that you're going to be unwell, that you're going to be prone to respiratory illnesses, et cetera, et cetera. And that was when the penny dropped for me. That you know, something had to change. So it was at that point where the 2012 legacy kicked in, and I certainly at that moment in time, as I walked out of the doctor's surgery, I had no plan to run a marathon, you know, let alone still be able to run a Bath, as I said. But it was just around the time of the introduction of the 24-hour gym. I'm not sure. Do we mention brands on here or not? I'm not sure.
We're pretty easy. We can mention anything.
But the likes of your Pure Gym and so on and so forth, your 24-hour convenience fitness. And it was just around that time. And it turned out that a company called Anytime Fitness were opening a health club just around the corner from where I worked in Birmingham. You know, just up on the Hagley Road, for anyone who knows Birmingham quite well. So in that moment, I said, right, I've got one chance just to try and get back into any kind of shape. And when I joined the club, I joined it with a view to lose a few pounds and just regain a little bit of confidence in who I in who I was. So I joined it, and my plan was always, right, this is a 24-hour club. I was typically in the office at 7:30 most mornings anyway. I've always been that kind of early riser. So my plan was, okay, the first bus leaves Birmingham City Centre to go that mile and a half up to the gym at 5:12 every weekday morning. So I was going to be on that bus, which means I'd be inside the club at 5:30 before anyone else got there. And I could basically, metaphorically, of course, not literally, but metaphorically die in privacy. And that's where we started. For those first few months, it was probably half a minute on the treadmill of what one might loosely describe as running, and then probably followed by about 5 minutes of walking. And of course, you know, over a period of time, you begin to bring those numbers a bit closer together. But even then, I knew that I still had no reason to, in my own mind, persevere.
Yeah.
So what I did was I decided to enter a 10K. Now, this was in February. So I decided to enter the Manchester Great Run, which was a 10K back in those days. It's a half marathon these days. I think they might still have the 10K. But I decided to enter that for the end of May that year. You know, I remember telling my friends, and they just looked at me, I think, partly in amusement, partly in incredulity, and partly in absolute concern that I would just keel over and stop breathing. But it was one of those, once I entered it, and most importantly, once I set up a fundraising page, so I did it to support Mind up in Manchester, the mental health charity, because ultimately, after the third attempt on my life, which had been in 2006 at the age of 32, it was Mind who really led me to a place of recovery, of hope, of dignity, of knowledge, and ultimately the diagnosis. And the diagnosis was power over the illness. And I just wanted to give something small back. Initially, which is, you know, as I said, the stories extrapolate itself beyond wildest dreams in the years since. But my initial goal for that 10K was run 6.2 miles, well, run and walk it, raise £250 for Mind, and walk away knowing that I was going to benefit from it. That's where the journey began back in 2013, the year after London. And even that in itself would have been some form of legacy.
Yeah, right. There's about 100 different questions I could ask off the back of that. Sadly, being a bit of a cricket tragic, my first one
Yeah.
is going to be, was your dad Elvin Kallachurran then?
Correct, yes.
Right. Wow. Oh, that's amazing. I didn't realize that. Sorry.
Well,
That's got nothing to do with running, so I will move on, but
oddly enough, he was he loved running himself, which was something that I never did when I was a kid growing up. I did follow in his footsteps with a love for cricket, but he as part of his training regime, he used to spend hours running around the cricket field at Edgbaston just doing laps, laps galore. I believe he's 74 now, and he lives in North Carolina, and he still goes for a short jog every few days, which is quite something.
oh, lovely. Slight diversion there. We'll get back to the running. And I think it's really interesting because I think when you did the Manchester 10K, you were still up at 16 stone, you were still heavy.
Yeah.
But that journey in doing that, you sort of say your workmates doubted you, but incredible journey and incredibly hard as that must have been, it must have been nothing as to what had happened over the last sort of 6 years of recovering from kind of the depths of where you were with your mental health.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And look, to be fair to them, I think they always knew that once I put my mind to it, I was going to do it, even if I crawled it.
Yeah.
I think there was a lot of fun Mickey taking, and I the nickname, of course, quite imaginatively or unimaginatively as the case may be, that I coined very quickly from them was Ro Farah. That stuck for a long time down there. But yeah, I think that journey of recovery was also a journey of discovery. I think you over a period of time, I think you realize that we can overcome things that we don't believe that we can. And if I go back to 2006 January, and I think at that time, I remember coming out of the hospital, and for the first time being referred to a psychologist who really I felt could help me. And he turned out to be quite literally a lifesaver. And I remember sat with him, and we pictured the fact that ultimately for the next 12 months, I was literally going to be a baby in the body of a man. Because quite literally, from the age of 18, from the age of 17, 18, when I really begun to fall ill, or at least when the illness began to demonstrate itself, all I'd known was a car crash. So I had, in my adult life up to that point, I'd never been able to hold down steady employment. I'd never been able to pay the bills. I'd never been putting food on the table. I had never been able to go 2 or 3 days without an acute episode, either of manic behavior or depression, because I, as it turned out, my diagnosis would be rapid cycling bipolar disorder. And all of these things, which I never use the word normal because I think that takes away our individuality. But ultimately, all of the things that people take for granted, all of the things that my peers were doing, even holding down friendships and relationships, was almost impossible because of the behavior that would come out, particularly during manic phases. And therefore, during that period of time, it really was being a baby in a man's body, learning just how to function in the way that the world expects you to. And that was a journey in itself. There were moments when I felt absolutely brilliant, this is great. But then there were moments when I just craved almost the chaos that I'd been used to. And in that moment, it's where you begin to build a level of resilience. And I don't ever like to overuse the word resilience. I think societally we do, but you begin to build that resilience. And I think it's that resilience which actually has really helped me on the running journey as well over various periods of time, because we just learn how to respond to adversity in a way that allows us to go beyond it. I think, I think when I talk about overusing the word resilience, and I talk about it with a lot with runners, say, for example, coming back from injury. If when we're talking about resilience, all we do is run into a wall, get up, and then run straight back into it, that's not resilience, it's stupidity. And when we talk about resilience, and I think that's what I learned through the recovery, was actually it's when you're learning to do something, if it's not going well, or if you hit that obstacle, that's absolutely fine. Then we just step away and say, well, I've tried my best, but we're going to look at what's a different way we can approach this. And I think that's really helped me with my running at different points as well. So I think that journey, as I said, almost from child in a man's body to man in a giant body, as I was at 18 stone, it taught me so much about the ability just to overcome and the ability just to be on your own journey. I think that was really key. And because I'd already started by that point, doing quite a lot of mental health awareness work with Mind at a time where there was still a hell of a lot of stigma attached to mental ill health and mental health as a whole. I think what that taught me was there's no shame for anyone. And I think, this is a message that I'd get across to every one of your listeners, that there's no shame in walking, or there's no shame in being slower than the person who's in front of you. When you go out to run, you are not, unless you are Eliud Kipchoge or being paid to do so, you're not in a race. And I think ultimately I think we've done really well as a running community to be very inclusive and to encourage people to remember actually the competition we're in is with ourselves every day, just to actually get out there when we feel that the world's looking at us and the world's judging us, just to get out there, persevere, and actually continue to be the very best we can be. And I think, that was what took me on my mental health journey. I still felt, because of the stigma of mental health, even though I was recovering, I still felt ill at ease. And, for a long time, I still didn't share my story publicly because I didn't want anyone to know about it. At that point, it was still a case of man up. And it was like, well, I don't want potential employers to know. I don't want potential relationships, potential friends to know that, I've attempted suicide, that I've been mentally ill, because they'll just judge me. And actually, overcoming that fear and having the resilience to show up every day in the workplace, in friendships, in relationships, and everything else enabled me at 20 stone to show up every day at the gym, show up every day to run, because I knew this isn't about anyone else. This is about my journey, and this is about being the best I can be every day. And can I look in the mirror every day? Because living through that darkness of mental ill health, I'd gone through years where I looked in the mirror and I was either terrified of or hated what I saw. And now, could I look in the mirror and love that person and know that that person was giving everything that they possibly could, and every day without fail, if I could do that, it didn't matter whether you win, it didn't matter whether I don't use the word fail, you could win or you could win a little bit less. The reality, as long as you'd given yourself every opportunity, I was a winner in those eyes.
Yeah, that's really interesting, and I think that's really interesting for people to hear when they're setting out on a running journey or wherever they are, or when they're dealing with mental health issues, because you showing up in the gym all the time at a time where you started out at 18 stone, that would put a lot of people off in that situation, completely wrongly. But people do sadly judge who is the right person to be in the gym, who is the right person to be running a marathon, how they look, how they act, and whether they've got the vapor flies on or a pair of trainers they picked up around the corner. And it's all entirely crazy, really. But from completing that 10K, what made you go, oh, I'm not just going to go back to the gym and lose a bit more weight, I'm going to go out and I'm going to run not just one marathon but a shed.
I think that was one time, Craig, when my mental health disorder really helped me, because I'm nothing if not with, and you know, I've not actually experienced, I never want to trivialize a manic episode of bipolar, because it's a horrible and quite dangerous thing, but actually there are elements of behavior which contribute to a manic a little bit, you know, that compulsive side of me. And once I'd done that 10K, it was kind of like, oh, I want more of this. I'm going to raise more money and I'm going to do more running. So I signed up initially for the Great North Run, which was, I say signed up, I entered the ballot for, didn't get in, but then managed to get a charity place with Mind. And then it turned out in the 3 weeks after the Great North Run, you had Royal Parks half, and Mind invited me to join their team there. And then they also had the first Great Birmingham Run as part of the Great Run series. And of course, if there was going to be a run at home, I wanted in. And that was it. I suddenly found myself, oops, you're going to do three half marathons in, I think it was five Sundays in the end. So three half marathons in four weeks. It's kind of like, oh no, what are you doing? And I mean, I look at the photos. By the time we got to the autumn and the half marathons, I'd lost a fair amount of weight. I was probably down at about 12 and a half, 13 stone, fairly fit, but still, you know, a novice at outdoor running, because between you and me, I did nearly all of my training for those half marathons. Apart from going outside to run the 10K at Manchester, I did nearly everything on a treadmill, because I was still scared of running outside. I was still scared that if I went out for a run and got tired or injured somewhere outside, I was kind of like, how am I getting home? Yeah. quite literally, I did all of my training on a treadmill. And it was only after I'd done the Great North Run I realized, oh, you can run outside, that's okay. And it went from there. But yeah, so I signed up to do the three halves. And once I completed them, I ran up the event team at Mind, and she said, I know what you're going to ask. I said, go on then. She said, April 26th next year, is it? I'm kind of like, how do you guess? that's where it all led to. It led to that first marathon, which was, I set foot in the gym on the something like the 2nd of February in 2013, and by the 26th, I think, of April. Actually, no, it wasn't. It was the 13th of April that year. By the 13th of April 2014, I was doing that first marathon. And it was a heck of a journey, but it's always a time in my life which I'll look back at with a huge amount of fondness and a huge amount of fun for all the things I got right, but all the things that I got wrong as well. I mean, you know, when I think of the journey, if I was coaching a runner how to do things now, I'd be kind of like, do not do what I did. But in the end, it didn't do me any harm.
Yeah, it's funny how sometimes when we're learning, we all go off in these really strange directions. I remember one guest who trained all the way up for a marathon by running on the treadmill, and I was just like, how on earth did you do that? I just don't understand how you survived.
I suddenly it was when I went out in Newcastle, I suddenly realised on the road, this is much easier actually. But it's when you see the photos as well. I'm wearing this pair of trainers, which I'm sure they must have been tennis shoes or general trainers. And it was only after that 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 I got my first pair of running shoes, which was still like a pair of bricks, but suddenly the difference was kind of like, oh, this is really cool. And I was still, throughout the training cycle, I was still a morning person. So I'd got so used to being in the gym at, at 5 o'clock in the morning. So getting out of bed at 4:45 so I could crawl out of bed to the bus stop to get to the gym. Nothing changed. I was still up at 4:45, go out for my run and do that. And I could often therefore do my long run in the week instead of having to do it at the weekend, because if I'm out at 5 a.m. there was some, once a week I'd just tell my boss, I'm not going to be in till 9, and I'd go out and do my longest run, then into work.
Oh, I love the idea of that. I must try another word with my boss and see if I can persuade it. But my wife might not be so happy getting up at half nine.
No, and I must admit, during that time I was single, and it was I met my wife in 2017, and we married in 2019, and she's been an amazing part of the journey, and so encouraging of the madness, for want of a better way of putting it. And I'm sure we'll talk about some of the madness that's happened this year, in the last few months. But she's always been, since we met, she's been the biggest encouragement. But I do also always try and be considerate, which does mean I wait at least until 6 a.m. to wake up and go out for my run, and at the weekends a little bit longer than that as well.
Oh, good stuff. Ultimately, and what people might not know is just how far that compulsion for running has led you now. So, Ro, just let people know how many marathons you've done now, and also you've not slacked in some of your times on them as well. So we're not all about time on the Running Tales podcast, but we do also like to celebrate it a little bit in terms of what people can achieve. And I think perhaps most importantly, how much money you've raised for charity by doing this stuff.
Yeah, I so as of today, I've run 81 marathons, and I've got things plotted out, most of them booked in to hit number 100 on 1st of June next year, which will be my 50th birthday. So really, really exciting. And I mean, crikey, if anyone had told me when I started the journey that this was where it would lead, I would have questioned their mental well-being, to be honest. But it's been an incredible journey, and it has allowed me to make a significant contribution to mind in the main, and as a charity, both for National Mind and some of the regional hubs. I've raised just over £45,000, pound over this last 11, 12 years, which is something I'm hugely proud of. And this is going to be my last fundraising year, because you can't keep on going to the well. And actually, even now I'm enjoying, dare I say, running for myself, for want of a better way of putting it. And we mentioned times, and I got to a point in 2017 actually where I did run my PB, which was 2:57:29. I never aimed to be a sub 3 hour marathon runner. It crept up on me and happened by accident. But in a way, it was great, and I'm so proud of it. But it also ended up being one of the worst things that could have happened to me, because for a period of time after that, it stripped away my love and enjoyment, because I was still going out and running every day in terms of my training and enjoying it. I've never been someone who had an inverted commas structured training plan. I just go out every day and run how I feel. That's always been me. So I never, you won't catch me really doing track sessions, or you won't catch me saying, well, today's my speed run or tempo run. I'll go out, I'll run the first mile easy, and then I'll know whether I'm gonna put in an effort run or just go nice and nice and easy. That's always been my way, and that's the way I want to run. I'm not a professional. I'm just someone who runs for my well-being, and that's it. But it stripped away that joy because I kept on turning up at races. Not, I never turned up to beat anyone else. I've never been competitive with anyone else because, as I said, I'm not Eliud Kipchoge. I'm not Mo Farah, despite the Roe Farah nickname. So I don't, it's not about that. But I did get to a point where I was constantly needing to prove to myself that it hadn't been a fluke, or I was constantly needing to prove to myself that I was still as fit as I was at a certain point. And it was just getting so toxic. And I was turning up at races, and it was always about, I've got to run this time. I've got to do this. Of course, by then as well, I was begun to start thinking about good for ages, wanting to qualify for this race, that race, the other. And ultimately, it stripped away that enjoyment. And in the end, I first got injured in 2019, which at the time, it was kind of, it was groin and hamstring, which just never really went away. And I was probably about 6 months on and off the treatment table. I remember running New York 4 years ago last week. And, you know, I think it's such a shame because New York is one of the great, great running events in the world. And, you know, I ran it in, you know, out of condition, out of form, out of enjoyment, because number one, I'd stripped myself of any enjoyment of running because it was kind of like, well, if I can't run a good time, why am I running a major? As it was, I was hurting anyway. So I was only running it because it was a major, and none of it made sense. None of it made sense. And the strange thing is, I'd always, with every single one of them, I'd still feel joy when I crossed the finish line. And I would still, in the evening, sit, have a bite to eat, have a beer. Back then, I did have a beer. I've actually, I've given up drinking now, which has been a good thing. But I'd sit down, have a meal and a beer, and I'd be really satisfied. But it was the build up to it, which had become horrible. And, you know, to cut long story short, it was in 2021. So 2021, fast forward a couple of years, I went into London knowing I had a niggle with what I thought was my calf.
Yeah.
But it was going to be my 50th marathon, and it was kind of like, no, I'm running it. I'm gonna run it. My mate's coming out to watch. We booked a table to watch Liverpool versus Manchester City in Covent Garden afterwards. I'm running this thing. And I remember my calf popped, or felt as if it had popped, after about six, seven miles. So through that kind of like Deptford piece before you get out to Surrey Quays and the like. And it was just, and I mean, I'm so grateful to St. John's Ambulance. I give them a big cheer every time I go past them now, because I remember that day, they were incredible. It's a good job I was wearing compression socks, because basically every mile I'd stop at their aid station and they'd just shove me a new ice pack down the compression sock. And I managed to limp home. And again, I think this is why I always say to people, times are relative. This is about individual journeys. And I remember, I think I ran it in about 4:11 in the end. And I remember people in the pub saying, why are you complaining about that? You should be overjoyed. And again, in a way, I was overjoyed with my resilience. I was just overjoyed it was finished as well.
Yeah.
And overjoyed, of course, to get to 50 marathons. But little did I know that after that, I wouldn't actually run another marathon for about 18 months, because it turned out, and I, once I'd seen the physio not long after that, it turned out actually that it was a problem with my Achilles tendon. and that there had been a small tear of the Achilles. So I was pretty much laid up for the rest of 2021 and the whole of 2022. And it is without a shadow of a doubt the very best thing that's ever happened to me. It repaired a relationship with running, which was in danger of going south. Well, actually, it had gone south. It really had, and it repaired it in the most beautiful way. And I remember I got up on Christmas morning, and I'd got the all clear by then. And I went out for a run. We were in Exeter with family, and I went out for a run on Christmas morning. And I mean, crikey, that was hard work. 5K felt like an ultra. And it's not flat down there either. And on Christmas morning, I was running around. I mean, I did make sure I had an elf hat on as well. But I'd put on a huge, I'd put on a good amount of weight again, not to the point where I was. But I was back at about 14 and a half stone because, I'd not been running. My mental health had been impacted a little bit. I was eating poorly. There was a lot of stuff going on at work and so on and so forth. So, I went back out on that Christmas morning, and it was kind of like, oh gosh. But in the back of my head, it was kind of like, well, hold on, you've come from a standing start, a lot worse than this. So don't worry. And I was very clear that my expectations were never to, I didn't need to run quickly ever again. I just needed to be able to run and enjoy it, and have fun. And 2 weeks later, I lost my job. This year, that's been a journey in itself. In a way, again, there were real positives from that because I was at a point. So in my career, I'm an HR director, typically within the startup tech space. And I think, for about 5, 6 years prior to that, I'd been working in really fast scaling companies, but I think more significantly, all of them in multiple time zones. So, if I look back 2018 to 20, I had teams reporting into me, stretching from West Coast of the US over to Sydney. So, I think with that kind of time zone, with that kind of with the pandemic, with everything that came with that, I was at a point where I was absolutely exhausted, where actually, again, my mental well-being was significantly being challenged. And whilst nobody wants to lose their job, and certainly, certainly I didn't. It was definitely for me, actually. When I thought about it, the timing couldn't have been better because it allowed me to step back. I was able to spend some time with an ill family member, looking after them. I was able to commit time to my own well-being. And I was then also able to really commit time to building up my fitness again, which was a real godsend in terms of structure for me. So I'm, I purposefully, in the end, took 5, 6 months out. I was working on a big project for Mind, for whom I'm now a trustee. So I was working on a big piece of work for them anyway, looking after, as I said, family, and then working on my fitness. And there's not been actually a weekday in those 9 months where I've been in bed, later than 6:30 in the morning, because I've kept that structure of being up, go out, do my training, come back, do whatever work I've got to do now into a job search. So doing the job search piece as well. I've also been doing part-time study in theology and ministry. So I've had a hell of a lot to keep me busy. But the key thing that's underpinned it all has been rebuilding that relationship with running. Now, you know, for me, I certainly didn't go in with the ambition to do what I've done this year. So I suppose let's cut to the chase and say, well, obviously, I think if the listeners have kind of like had their arithmetic on sharply, they will have heard, well, he did 50 marathons up to 2021, had 18 months out without doing a marathon, and he says he's now done 81. So yes, I have done 31 this year. And I think I've run about 3,500 miles this year, but and yet none of it's been done with a stupid level of intensity. And I say that as someone who in that time I did the fabled tit 10 marathons in 10 days, which again, it was an accidental tit. I'd initially signed up to do 3 in 3 days. And then I saw that there were 2 on elsewhere on the Monday and Tuesday. So I was doing a Friday, Saturday and Sunday with the guys down at Phoenix Running in Walton on Thames with Rick. And then Saturn were doing their 10 in 10 at the same time. So I thought, well, you know what? I'll go and do the Monday and Tuesday and do 5. That'll be great. And then, of course, you do 5 and you suddenly think to yourself, and it was kind of like I said, okay, I'll do 7. And then the wife just looked at me and said, you're not working at the moment, you've got no other commitments, I don't want you doing this when you've got a job next year, just do it. And I'm kind of like, okay. So that was the accidental 10 in 10. And actually with the 10 in 10, I felt stronger with every day because I hadn't been pushing myself stupidly. And I mean, you know, and again, we talk about things being relative. There was a huge level of consistency. I think over the first 5 days, every one of my times was between 3:40 and 3:43. And then I, over the next 4 days, I think I was typically between about 3:35 and 3:38. And again, because running slightly different courses, which just happened to be a little bit quicker. And then on the last day, I was kind of like, well, you know what, we're gonna have some fun. And I think I ran around in 3:31. You know, prior to that, I'd come back and I'd done Brighton and London earlier in the year as, you know, as road races. And I think, you know, I did around 3:14 for each of those. But the most important thing for both of those was just having a smile on my face. And the most, it was, I remember chatting with my wife after London, you know, getting to the finish line and just knowing that I'd had fun, that I'd had so much fun out there, that it had been about helping other people on their journey and taking on that responsibility of knowing, well, actually, you've done this thing enough times. Be aware around you. See the people who might be struggling or see the people who just need that pat on the shoulder, that word in the ear just to say, you're doing absolutely brilliantly here. And actually, you know, just being here, you're an absolute champion. And for me, that's what those two days were about. That I think that reignited just my whole love of the thing. And, you know, as I said, that was before the 10 in 10. And once I got through the 10 in 10, I suddenly realized that perhaps that dream of getting to 100 marathons by my 50th birthday was still on. So, you know, I have kept on piling up the numbers over that period of time. And, you know, as I said, I've ended up doing 31 this year, of which 29 have been in the last 16 weeks. But again, feel really, really good. Most of them are, you know, low intensity, done on the Thames Path trail runs. You know, I have had an autumn road season, which has been terrific, and ended up with the last one, Battersea Park Marathon, which was great because I live less than a mile from Battersea Park. You know, running the quickest time that I've run in 5 years over the distance, which was awesome. I loved it, and it was a great feeling. No kind of like compulsion to try and run quicker though. For me, it was just, I went out and it happened to be that It was a perfect morning for running. It was still, the sun was shining, the course was flat as a pancake, and I knew every contour in that park like the back of my hand. It was just kind of like, yeah, just enjoy. It's just been an incredible year, and I feel so blessed, Craig. I think that the thing for me is to come from a place where I'd fallen out of love with it, because actually it was making me so anxious before every race, to get back to that point where you can just do it for the love, and if you happen to have a great run, even better, but who cares if you don't? I certainly don't. It's just been a wonderful feeling. We're off to we're off on our travels on Thursday morning to Tenerife, where there may happen to be a marathon on Sunday, which I may well be heading to the start line for. And you know, from my point of view, again, I just go in knowing, well, actually, I'm going to go out, have fun. I'm in great shape, and whatever happens, happens. But the most important thing for me is running with a smile on my face. I have got a deep faith, which is something, you know, again, for another discussion. And I think, you know, for me, part of that faith as a Christian is demonstrating the joy in the everyday of people looking at you and kind of like, well, I want some of what they've got. I want to understand what feeds that joy. And, you know, I've been, because of, you know, the job search, because of some ill health in the family, and because of some other things going on, I'm not going to pretend that my mental well-being hasn't been challenged recently. In fact, I have been going through, even as we speak, a fairly difficult period of clinical anxiety and depression. But again, number one, having running in such a sensible place is really helping me to manage that. But also knowing what I've overcome before helps me to manage that more than anything.
Well, Ro, I wish you all the very best in getting up to the 100 marathons. I'm sure you'll have, well, I won't say absolutely no problems, because I know what mental health can be like. But what I mean is, I'm sure you will battle your way through to the other side of this latest thing.
Absolutely.
You'll be good. And thank you so much for imparting some words of wisdom today on Running Tales.
It's just been an absolute pleasure. Believe me, you and your guests keep me very entertained, sometimes amused, but always very well educated and informed on many runs. So absolute privilege to join you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks again to Rohan Kalacharan for joining me on the Running Tales podcast. I hope you enjoyed his incredible story as much as I did. And I wish him all the best in reaching that magical 100 marathon mark very, very soon in the future. If you enjoyed Rohan's story, and if you enjoy what we do generally on Running Tales, I'd love it if you could give us a positive rating or a review wherever you listen to this podcast. I say this every week, but it really does help other people to find us and to allow us to tell more and more stories like that of Rohan. We can also be found on social media across Twitter or X or whatever it's called these days. We're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on YouTube, where all our podcasts are also broadcast in full. And you can also find us on our Substack channel, where we produce written stories based around these conversations and plenty of other articles from around the running world. Thank you again for joining me this week, for listening to Rohan's story, and I look forward to seeing you again next week for another Running Tales podcast.